The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place. That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Hello and welcome back to Surf Splendor. This is, of course, your host, David Scales. Today, we wax on with filmmaker Jack Coleman. You've seen his work. I'm really pleased to be able to bring you this conversation with Jack. We talk on this show a lot about surfers who you'll kind of stop whatever you're doing to watch whenever they drop an edit or a video piece, like Dane Reynolds or Mason Ho. You stop what you're doing, you watch it so that you can participate in the conversation with everybody on the internet in real time because everybody's watching. Well, there's not a lot of filmmakers that I would do that for, but Jack is actually one of them. Whenever I see one of Jack's short edits pop up on the internet, I stop and I watch it because they're fun and they're interesting. And I mentioned that you've probably seen his work. He does these commercial shorts for companies like Vizsla, Mollusk, Surf Shop. They're embedded all over the web. He does his own too that aren't necessarily branded by any company, but they feature surfers like Rob Machado, Alex Nost, Ryan Birch, Ozzie Wright, and he's actually made a few feature-length films as well. Most recently was this last year. It was called The Zone, and then prior to that was Groove Move, and all of the A-plus clips that he filmed throughout the course of the year are reserved for those feature-length projects, and some really iconic sessions have gone down in those films. Derek Hind. So I have trailers. I have the video clips. It's always tough to talk about such visual things on this show, but of course, SurfSplendorPodcast.com has everything that I just mentioned and then everything that Jack and I discuss in this episode. I'll put teasers of those things up on Instagram throughout the week at SurfSplendor. Follow along there if you don't already. It's shocking, actually, how many listeners we have to the show of this show, and then how few, by comparison, follow on Instagram. So if you use Instagram, give us a follow at Surf Splendor, and then share the show from there. As our audience has expanded, thanks to you sharing it, I've been able to increase our show offerings, which has been really, really cool. So this show, Wax On, of course, we have Shaping Surfing, we have Spit with Scott Bass, and of course, Grit with Chaz Smith is a new offering. And even more recent than that, I actually just this week launched a wine podcast as well. So if you want to check that out, you can find it on any podcasting app. It's called The Double D Wine Show, and the website is thedoubledwineshow.com. If you care at all about wine, please check that out. And without further ado, allow me to wax on with filmmaker Jack Coleman. I will be back at the end of the show to sign us off. Thanks again. Tell me about today. Let's get it on the mic since what did the day consist of?
The day consisted of, I probably woke up like, I've been waking up kind of early lately, like almost the sun's been coming up 5-ish. Yeah. I've been like up at 5. I've had this weird kind of energy right now. I guess I'm just kind of really excited for summer, and especially when there's waves. I'm kind of just up early. So woke up, and I usually just check the cams. And yesterday I went down to San Clemente, and I knew it was, like, pretty fun. And I looked at the cams. I was like, oh, there's still some waves. And did a few things, did a few editing things that I needed to do, went to the post office, mailed off a few things that I needed to do, and then, yeah, I made a few phone calls, and I'm like, I'm going, and went down again, and I went to San Onofre, and on the way in, I saw lowers, and I was like, oh my gosh, it's on again. It was, yeah, like, just perfect lowers, like, but I heard it was kind of too peaky, almost.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
But it was just beautiful, you know, not a crack. Like, it's just sun, no clouds in the sky, like dead blue water. And so, yeah, I just went straight to Sano. And then I got my surf in before the guys I was shooting got there.
Okay.
So I knew, I'm like, oh, they're coming around noonish. And I got there like 10:30. So I got my surf in, and then everyone came. I had, you know, 5 different friends that met me today that I shot with. So working on a few projects. And yeah, I just...
Who'd you shoot?
I shot Tyler Warren in the morning, and then Tanner and Levi Prairie, who are brothers. I'm doing like a little short on them as brothers.
Cool.
And one's like a really good shaper, and the other one's like me. They're just rad surfers, rad guys. And Justin Adams showed up. He's the last one that showed up. And Kyle Kenley was there as well. He's a friend of mine that they all, you know, I really like all their surfing. I'm kind of doing something with each of them, so.
Cool.
Yeah,
just. Yeah, been to Kyle's coffee shop.
Sweet, yeah, Daydream. Yeah, it's totally epic.
Shout out to Daydream.
Yeah, Daydream.
I wanted to start off just by saying, I'm going to kind of read from my notes if you don't mind.
Yeah,
my
no problem.
My eyes aren't. My experience watching your films, edits, whatever, has been kind of an epiphany, or kind of mind-altering in realization and recognition of how waves can be ridden, you know, like, and how boards can be ridden. The guys you're filming with, the types of boards that they're riding, if left to my own devices, I just kind of focus on high-performance surfing, because that's kind of what I grew up with.
Yeah.
High-performance thruster shortboarding, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so... even though I don't shred anymore, that's still kind of where my focus is. So being exposed to stuff like you're doing, it really enlightens me and is like, oh my gosh, I can have so much more fun rather than being disappointed every session that my ability level is digressing or digressing. Yeah. And so your films not only highlight alternative craft, but also alternative lines, you know, and uses of a wave's energy and ways that you can explore that wave. The other thing is, like, John Florence's surfing is so freakishly unrelatable. You know, it's like I can admire when he does an insane alley-oop at Aukai or off the wall, but I'll never do anything like that. And so I feel like in your films there's an element of relatability, the way that those guys are surfing. And so, it's aspirational, I think, is what it is. And it's been really an eye-opening experience for me, being exposed to that, to your stuff.
Epic. Thank you.
Yeah,
that's kind of what I'm trying to get across with my films. Yeah, absolutely. I was right where you were as well. I was, grew up in the whole thrust. I grew up, you know, the Tom Curran was like my hero. I grew up with all that. And then the Taylor Steele movies came, and I just wanted to shred, you know. I was shredding. Just shred. And then you kind of reach a level. It's like, for me, it was in my late 20s where I kind of almost started to, like you're saying, digress, I felt. I was like, man, I peaked when I was like 24-ish, I thought. And then after, I was kind of digressing. And then it started to be not as fun because I was like, why aren't I doing the same thing? I mean, 2 years ago, I was on a 6.0. Now I can't get in on my 6.0 or... And then eventually I started chopping the noses off my board. And then like the Piranha, the C5 started to come in, the little bit more fish design started to come in. And then I got one of those, and then I was like, whoa, you know, like I could have fun every day. Mm-hmm. And, And then I started to eventually, you know, in my 30s, I started getting, I got into longboarding. Or I got a longboard off of a friend for $300, it was a 9.6.
Okay.
And I was just like, every day, I was like, wow, you could just go out and have a blast every day. And I just caught like 100 waves. Like, this is incredible, you know? Like, see you later, shortboard. And I kind of haven't really looked back that much. I mean, I don't really miss like hitting the lip really hard or doing that rappy. I love more of the flow of a wave and stuff. And I just have evolved into where I'm at now. And then with the guys that I show in my films and then in all my shorts and stuff as well, I'm definitely interested in those guys that are taking different lines, you know, because mm-hmm. I want an element of relatability that you said is absolutely like, because you could see, John at like Teopu, and it's after a while, it's almost kind of boring. I'd rather see like someone, you know, working it through a normal beach break or something like that, or on a board that's not a thruster.
I have time and room for both things, you know. They serve different purposes for me, I guess.
For sure. 100%.
I find, talking about that longboard situation, I found myself the last week hoping for longboard days, and then I'd show up at the beach and I'm like, dang it, I gotta ride my shortboard again. And I was like bummed out, you know?
Really?
Yeah, because there was too much swell.
I know, that's you're right.
It's funny.
Yeah, man, I can't even really, you know what, it actually happened to me 2 months ago, and I was in Australia, I was shooting with Aussie Wright, he brought two boards, or it was me, Aussie, and Wade Goodall, and I'm like, wow, these are like my favorite shortboarders and stuff, but Aussie's really into doing other stuff, and especially like when he's with me, he'll be like, what board should I ride, you know, I don't know, And he had a fish, a Joel Fitzgerald fish, and then he had like a chili shortboard. And it was kind of like a really punchy, beach breaky kind of day. And it was definitely like head high and solid and like tubing. And I was like, well, you know me. I was like, just take the fish, you know, take the fish out. So he took the fish out. And like within like 30 minutes, I was just like, whoa. So I'm struggling and he was just getting smoked. And then so he ran in, grabbed a shortboard, went out. It started going nuts. I was like, wow, okay, so that's, for me, I can't imagine like what situation a shortboard's good for, but there is a lot of situations that they're the right board to use.
Interesting.
And I knew, I was like, oh, okay, you know, I'm so far to the other side of the spectrum from the high fidelity, hi-fi stuff,
right,
that it doesn't even really touch in my brain anymore, because it's like, to see an air reverse or to see, it doesn't really excite me anymore. It's almost like unattractive kind of.
Sure.
It's weird. I'd way rather see, you know, someone riding a really weird board or like any, you know, an Alea, anything that's different. That's where I'm like, whoa, that's pretty insane.
Hmm.
But I feel like I'm so far gone now.
Yeah.
But this next film that I'm working on is going to have some shortboarding. I'm going to like really work on, all right, I want some shortboarding because I want Wade in the movie, and obviously, you know, Ozzy is another guy that I've worked with for a long time. So and Ozzy's like, I mean, Wade's straight like kind of shortboard guy, so I'm gonna have some shortboarding in the next, because it was a major part of me growing up in surfing and stuff, and I've you know, almost like shunned, turned my back to it in a way, but there's you got to shred when you're a Grom and stuff, you know? It's all about, like, you just got to shred.
I'll tell you what, dude. I could see a lot more of Wade Goodall than I do. Like, I'm desperate to see that footage. Like, the guy shreds. He's so rad.
Dude, he's unbelievable. He's the most, like... It's weird, because here in America, he's, like, literally unknown, kind of.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not very much footage of him. And, he's just this really kind of under the radar misto guy, but in Australia he's like a hero. Everyone loves him, but he still is just so humble that he doesn't bring the attention to himself. And I think that is why he's able to sustain like the career he's still going.
Yeah.
You know, he has two kids now.
Oh, does he?
Yeah, he has two kids. And everyone just loves him. He's just got such a good heart, and he's such a good person that I think that his career will just continue to grow. But what he has is, one of my really good friends is like, grew up with him. He has cat-like reflexes, and he's like literally like the best balance. So when you watch Wade, you realize like, wow, his balance is really incredible. Hmm. Like up there, there's a few guys like Bryce Young comes to mind, or Wade. These guys have like, I mean, world-class balance, and that's why they are who they are, you know?
Yeah. For listeners who don't know, I think like his career trajectory has been limited by, he was with Billabong and got cut when everybody kind of got cut.
Yeah.
So that was kind of right in his prime. Then he broke his leg twice, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was there any other injuries?
He had an ankle, a knee. Yeah. Okay. He broke his leg twice. Yeah. At the same spot, Green Point in New South Wales.
Was it opposite legs or the same leg?
It was the, I'm not 100%, but I want to say that it was just opposite leg.
I feel like it was too.
Yeah.
I feel like it was like so ironic. The story was like, oh my gosh, you're never going to believe this.
Yeah. You know? Pretty wild.
Yeah.
But yeah, so right now he's 100%, first time in years. And
is he on Vans head to toe?
Yeah, he's on Vans head to toe.
Good for
and
him.
Then and he's still doing it, and I wouldn't even care. I mean, I'd actually prefer he wasn't riding for anyone, but I'd love to see him on a board with like no stickers and stuff like that. But he's an exception to like what I usually do in my films. You know, it's usually totally. Kind of logoless, like that type of look. But this one, I'm definitely kind of going to go a little bit more out into the mainstream world. You know,
well. Nobody else is covering him, I feel. So you might as well, you know?
Yeah, that's what I say. I want to bring to America, you know, so they could kind of see him. But, obviously in Australia, he's like, he's a hero. Everyone loves him.
Yeah. So let's back up a little bit. What got you interested in filmmaking?
Well, I did photography.
Okay.
Like, so I started shooting photos and stuff, and it was, you know, the mid-90s, like 35mm was still the format. And I was just doing, and then I eventually was like, well, I want to do photography for a living. And I did all the, you know, portraits, you know, started out like shooting the kids on the beach and doing that basic stuff. And that evolved into like, I was doing weddings, and then I was doing lookbooks, I was doing products, I was doing, you know, studio stuff, everything. And then I was like, oh, I want to go to art school, and kind of, I feel like I've reached where I'm at. And that was like after 8 years of shooting photos, but I was you know, starting to make a living off of it. So then I went to school, and in school is when I kind of found Super 8, because we were really kind of shooting large format stuff, you know, learning what the camera does and all the like processing and everything. And I knew what Super 8 was from my childhood, because we used to project the films and stuff and the 16 and everything in our home. And right when I found that, I kind of knew. I was like, whoa, this is pretty interesting, you know? So I was doing that for a while, and I was actually like living with the band at that point. I lived with the Growlers for 2 years, and I was kind of like shooting all their music videos and then going on tour with them. And it was kind of like, they let me, you know, I was almost like the sixth member of the band for a couple of years. And then it reached a point where management was just like, hey, Jack, well, what do you want to do with the band? And, you know, and I kind of, back in my mind, I realized the whole time, I just like, surfing's the love of my life. And I realized, I'm like, well, why don't I try and make surfing films? Because that's what I, or, you know, I tried doing surf photography at first, and it was really hard. I didn't have the equipment, and I just had like portrait style equipment. And then eventually I just was like, well, let me try shoot, you know. I was like, oh, I knew a few people. One was Alex Nost, was, you know, 2009-ish. And he's like, yeah, I just started shooting surfing with my Super 8 for fun. And it's, here we are 10 years later, and it's finally come into to that. So that was the kind of realization I knew I had. You know, I had like, I was hustling, doing the shooting weddings and shooting lookbooks and doing all this stuff, shooting girls and on the set. And there's like 40 people watching you shoot a girl and fix your hair and all these, like, I kind of realized, like, well, this is kind of like fake. You're creating fake scenes, and I wanted more realness in my life. And I felt that photography was kind of, you create this false world, and with film, you have to bring some element of realness to it, because there's moving, there's motion, and you could create something. You could create your own little worlds, basically. And then that was how I made the switch from photography to videography and stuff. And I kind of knew as well, I was like, man, everyone's a photographer now by 2010, you know, 12, 13, it was like everyone was a photographer. And I knew that it was more difficult to shoot video and film, because I'd tried both. I was like, well, it's kind of like harder to shoot video. You got to set up and shoot with the tripod and all this stuff. And so I knew, I was like, well, there's not very many people that do that. And that was my opportunity. I felt like I was going to try and give that a go. And that's how I got into it.
What appealed to you about Super 8?
I would say, yeah, just kind of nostalgic for me, because we had the projector at our house, and it would be like we would go on family vacations, or my uncle Buddy would come and shoot his Super 8, and then we'd all, like, my uncles would sit together, and there would be 30 of us in the living room just watching it, and just like, oh my gosh. And I like the texture of it, the feel of it. I mean, I like 16 mil, I like all of that, you know, the analog stuff. Because, yeah, when I first started doing photography, there was no digital. I remember when digital came in the scene, and, like, I was kind of like the last one. I was like, whoa. And then eventually, yeah, I got my Canon 10D, and I was like, oh, wow, this is crazy, you know.
Yeah.
So, but, yeah, you know, it's a whole process. It's kind of like shooting it, and then you put it away, and you're just like, oh, my God, you know, did I get anything? And I shot for a couple years. And a lot of the footage came back and was like, really, I was shooting the wrong surfer and it was almost unusable. And a lot of stuff was just like really bad, but I had to kind of just keep treading forward. And then, it, you know, after like a couple years of shooting, just like average surfer, like friends and stuff, I started shooting with like real surfers. And like in one trip, I was like, I got more footage in one day than I just did in the last 2 years. Okay, you got to shoot guys that know how to surf. So,
right.
So I kind of figured that out. And then, yeah, that was when I kind of, me and Alex kind of came together. And there was another surfer around Newport. His name was Josh Hoyer, who was kind of a underground legend. And he was nice enough to, yeah, you know, let me shoot with him in the first parts of when I started shooting surfing. So those were the first two guys that I really started working with. And then
I love Hoyer.
Yeah,
I don't see him around that much anymore. Is he still surfing? Or
yeah, no, I haven't seen him in the water in like in a few months, like 6 months or something. But yeah, usually he's out there. But I guess I did see him a few months back, maybe like 3 months back, and he was like, he's doing concrete.
Oh really?
Yeah, he's doing concrete now. And
he got like a family and stuff.
No, he's still single. He like has this bachelor pad with like all this like motorcycle parts and like animal skulls in the living room, like head to toe, just like kind of hoardish almost, like crazy. And yeah, he just kind of is like, you know, he's doing like window displays or concrete. He's just really like interesting dude that's kind of like doing his own thing, you know.
That's awesome. I'm but glad to hear that, actually.
Yeah, he every once in a while, when, like, it's really good, he'll paddle out. And everyone's like, yeah, Hoyer, you know.
Dude, the guy shreds.
He still looks the same. He's probably, like, 140 pounds, like, just so skinny still. Like, oh, my God.
Can you explain for listeners, like, the challenges of working with film as opposed to digital? And, like, the expense involved and the processing and all that? I mean, you obviously said you're not sure what you have in the can. And then you get it back sometimes and there's no payoff. But there's expense involved, I would imagine.
Yeah. That's probably, you know, one of the main things now that it's kind of almost not that feasible to do for shooting surfing. because I've moved now into, I brought digital into the mix, and I'm really loving shooting digital. I mean, the digital looks great, and I think it offsets the film really nicely. But some of the challenges are, like, obviously the expense, and then, you know, the equipment that you have to get, because they stopped making these particular cameras, like, in 1983, well, I think was the last. There's a few companies that just came out with new cameras for Super 8s and stuff. So you're using old equipment, and a lot of the time, like, you could be out on a trip and your camera will just go down out of nowhere because it's, you know, 40, 50 years old sometimes.
And super hot, super humid.
Yeah, or, you know, just something goes out, and there's like, that I know of, one guy, like some 75-year-old dude that is in Pasadena that's able to repair a lot of these cameras, so you can't find people to repair them.
Yeah.
So that's pretty tough. And then, you know, getting the film, and then now you have to get the film transferred after you get it processed, which is another step, and more money as well. But
so that's, you transfer it to digital, so then you can edit it together whatever you use with the digital footage.
Yep.
Right.
But yeah, back in the day, they didn't do that. They just, you know, they had to cut it themselves and stuff. So yeah, I got it easy. I'm like, this is easy.
Right.
But yeah, also exposing the film correctly, because it's like, a lot of times you're going to have to manually expose for the light that you're shooting in and stuff. So, you know, it's not like you just pop it in and wee, you know. So it takes an element of kind of knowing what's going on and stuff.
Sure.
So, but for me now, it's like, I could look in this corner and be like, oh yeah, I want to be at, you know, 2.8 at a 60th because it's low light. I look out here, I'm like, oh, that's 250. You know, I'm just constant, like, reading of the light and then knowing the film and your camera, because certain cameras will expose the film differently and stuff. So,
right. What filmmakers did you kind of admire as you were getting into it? Like, who did you look up to? I know you said you watched the Taylor Steele stuff when you were really young, but as you're exploring working with actual, like, Super 8 and 16 mil.
Yeah. No, it was crazy because, yeah, I was super hi-fi when I was growing up. I just was shredding, and I was like, man, I loved Taylor Steele's movies, obviously. And I loved Jack McCoy's movies. So that was in that kind of early 90s range right there. That was like right when I was, you know, 18-ish, kind of doing that. And yeah, like I was never into like any longboarding movies and stuff. I was almost like anti-longboarding stuff, you know, when you're that year, like, oh, screw these longboarders.
Totally.
Yeah, so I mean, obviously Endless Summer was like my favorite movie of all time. I remember the den that I sat in and watched it at, you know, age 8 or 9.
Really?
I still remember, I could feel the light in it, who was with me, and just going like, oh my good, this is, you know, the coolest thing I've ever seen in my life, you know.
Wow.
So then, yeah, I kind of eventually started to look into a little bit more, I started to dig deeper. And then, you know, Innermost Limits of Pure Fun came to me, Morning of the Earth. And when I saw these movies, I was like, wait a second, this is what I wanted to do. And someone's already done this, because I knew with the look and the feel of the film that I was shooting. But I was so oblivious to the history of the cinema, the surf cinema. I thought I was going to be the first person ever to do this kind of stuff.
Right.
So, yeah. So what I saw, I was like, wow, this is exactly like what I'm thinking in my head of what it's going to look like when I am able to do this stuff. So yeah, right after, you know, it must have been 2009-ish, I would say, when I got introduced to Greeno, and ever since, you know, it's just like, oh, wow, you know, like, he's, you know, the man. Obviously, I've just bowed down to and respect him so much. So yeah, that was kind of the turning point where I kind of was like, all right, well, wow, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on, and you know, the Severson movies and all, just starting to kind of later on absorb it all. So I think it's a normal thing for a lot of surfers, like, to kind of, as they grow, they'll kind of be introduced to the other side. So
And also develop a reverence for the history, you know, not just what you were raised on being new and fresh.
Exactly.
I'm curious, like, even in the last 10 years, the medium has changed so much. Like, the internet. Because, I mean, I would think 2009, the objective would have been feature-length surf film. And since that time, you know, the three-minute edit has kind of taken over. And then the 15-second Instagram clip has taken over now, you know? So I'm curious, what's that process been like for you? And
I don't know. I haven't really thought. I mean, every once in a while it kind of comes into my mind, like, whoa.
Well, what's your objective, though? I mean, is your goal still to make feature-length films?
Yeah. That's – I've kind of – I always have the one – like, today I was shooting for, four separate things. So when I'm shooting, I'm, going, okay, it almost comes out to, if I'm shooting for my feature film, there's one of the surfers, you know, you got to have the right board, the right everything. It's hard to get all those elements together. So say I shoot a session and it's like, whoa, this is going to be a short for so-and-so. This is good. And then this guy is going to be a short for so-and-so. And then the best waves from that day, I'm saving for my main film, which is going to be coming out in a couple years. So I keep tucking away my favorite clips.
Okay.
And then all the other stuff I use to kind of keep the ship going, you know, for this is short for this, this is short for that. And that's kind of how I've been doing it since the internet's come in to play.
Yeah.
And
when you're hiring for a small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. And there's no faster or effective way than through LinkedIn Jobs. Your time and capital are precious, and there is a powerful resource that can help you focus on what you're good at and integrate people into your team seamlessly to help grow your business. LinkedIn Jobs has created the tools to find the right professionals for your team efficiently and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. Everyone is already on LinkedIn with their resumes and references, and now LinkedIn has designed a hiring platform to connect you with candidates specifically qualified for the job that you post about. More than a billion professionals meticulously organized to connect people by skill set to help us all advance our position. 2.5 million businesses already use LinkedIn for hiring, and 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. It's that fast, easy to use, and effective. LinkedIn Jobs can help you write job descriptions, filter the right person to you, and give you the tools to help you interview them like a pro. LinkedInJobs.com/surf is where you go to post your job for free. Yes, totally free. That's linkedinjobs.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Yeah, I mean, it's even to the point now where it's like, I don't know, you know, if there's a clip that I'd used a couple clips that I'd put in a short and I was kicking myself like, why did I put it in that short? Oh, no. And I just look at it this way. It's like the internet stuff, it's like in people's eyes 1 second and it's gone the next for the most part, and movies last forever. So if there's a wave or a particular shot that I'd used in a short and I'm like, oh, I want to put this in my film, I think that the film will have more longevity and it won't matter because no one's going to go oh, do you remember that one short in February 2016 where Justin did that one top turn? Let's go find it on the internet. No, right. It's like, So yeah, I feel like I've been making my films and stuff for, I want them to be relevant in, 20 years, 40 years, or when I'm gone and passed away, I'd love for them to be referenced whoa, this is a pretty interesting time in surfing. So that's kind of my approach to filmmaking and stuff now mm-hmm. in the internet age. Cause yeah, it's especially now it's like, I'm just able to focus on surfing. So I'm able to make, you know, make my living and get by so I could go to the next trip and make the next movie and stuff like that. So that's how I've been doing it. But yeah, it was pretty scary for a little bit there, but then at the same time, it was kind of like, I could do this blindfolded, you know, mm-hmm. like 2 minute edits. Like I could burp one out, you know,
yeah.
It's really kind of easy, you know, totally. Like it's very, very simple, simple thing. It's
well, if you don't mind, I'm curious to talk about the business of it a little bit. Like, obviously you said you were in Australia, that there's an expense there. Mm-hmm. What does the business model look like? And is it that the feature length film serves as a portfolio piece to then get commercial work and
yeah,
how does the business work?
Yeah, yeah. I'm kind of different than a lot of filmmakers, I think, like or that the business oriented ones. Like I'm in it not for like the money, it seems like.
but you still gotta fly to Australia.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Well, no, absolutely. I mean, but yeah, when I do work for certain people, sometimes they'll be like, hey, you know, or we're going to pay you this much for it. So I'm like, whoa, okay, that's a plane flight. So that would pay for my plane flight. And then when I get there, I'm usually like crashing with friends. You know, it's not like I get there and I'm like five-star hotel.
Of course.
So yeah, I usually stay. It's almost, it seems like the last maybe, you know, 10 years, I'm almost like this like traveling kind of will work for shelter kind of thing. I stay with a lot of people I stay with. I usually do film projects for them or with them and stuff. And then, yeah, as far as the money is, like all the money that I make from the shorts or, you know, the shorts that I sell, like so that's one of the areas. You know, I have a few clients that I do shorts for. You know, it was Corduroy, Thalia or Mollusk is, you know, one of my main people that I do stuff for. That's just, you know, boom. And then over the last 2.5 years, I'm a brand ambassador now for Vizsla. So they've been helping me out. Like in a couple weeks, I'm going to Indonesia with Birch and Bryce and Disney for my next film.
Wow.
And Vizsla helped pay for my plane flight, so that helps, you know.
Two of those guys are their guys, right?
Yeah.
Disney and
yeah,
and
Diz and Bryce. So
Bryce,
so yeah, that's why they kind of knew, like, okay, this is going to be good for us. Well, for sure, you know, like if I need help, I could ask. And for the most part, I'm pretty simple. I'm not very high tech. I mean, I use very basic equipment. I'm not like a big, like I got my laptop, and when I go on a trip, I'm kind of just there. I'm not like, I don't even have, you know, I have a flip phone.
Right.
I don't, so I'm very kind of low maintenance. You could stuff me in a corner and I'm happy. I'm just happiest when like I'm shooting, surfing, I'm by the ocean. Like that's what makes me happy. And I think that people like having me around because that's kind of what I bring, you know, to whoever I'm staying with or whoever's kind of helping me or anything. It's kind of like I try not to take more than I give, and I feel like I've just been kind of swimming through, like barely getting by. And but you know, over the last year has been the most successful year, or since my last film has been the most successful, and I'm really appreciative of all the, you know, people that have purchased one online through the online is, you know, now is a new avenue. So now I'm working with someone in Japan. So I have like, they're getting my films, renting them. And then I get, you know, the short money in, the ambassador money in, and it's just, you know, it's pretty, it's enough to travel and go on the next trip. You know, I'm not driving a BMW or anything, but not like I want to, but
no. So the last film, The Zone.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's the equitability of making a feature film nowadays? You know, like obviously you said you're working on it for a couple of years,
yeah.
And then the return on the investment is just selling individual units, right?
Yeah.
And how does that work out? Does it actually cover its own cost?
Yeah, probably.
Okay, good.
But I think that even if I was not making the feature length film, I would have been doing it anyways. It's just like, I'd be spending all my money on surfing anyway.
Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
It's kind of like a, yeah, you know, up to the zone, all of my movies were kind of, I didn't really even care about making money at the end of it.
Sure.
And so yeah, it was nice that this one, how it kind of worked out, you know, like it was like, whoa, you know, I made a little bit, enough to kind of get me, I was like, well, I guess I'm gonna make another one. But yeah, you know, it's not lucrative, but I'm not out there trying to make it lucrative. I mean you could be really, like, you know, kind of all or Taylor, who are very good entrepreneurs, and they branched out into very business structured type things, and I like to just keep it like, yeah, let's keep it Smiles, Shaka's, and just, I'm not really too worried about that. But if it comes, it's great, because, like, it's really nice now to be able to go, like, whoa, you know, I could go get myself a burrito. I'm not like, oh my gosh, I'm like, you know, I have no money, because it was like that for a long time.
And also, I think, just to be able to continue your craft.
Yeah.
You know? Like, yeah, that's an important thing.
Yeah, totally.
With feature film in general, you seem to be very intent that it still has a place in the world, in surfing and in surf culture. I question that more and more kind of each year, as I feel like my time just gets stretched thinner and thinner, and like a film will come out that I really want to see. And then a month later, I'm like, oh, I still haven't made the time to see that, you know?
Yeah.
And then somebody else tells me, like, oh, it's phenomenal. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool, I'll watch it. And then another month goes by because I can't carve out an hour of my time.
Yeah.
Or because on Netflix, House of Cards is available, and that's phenomenally good, you know?
Yeah.
And so maybe there's just more things competing for my time. But I question whether or not that's even something that we need anymore in surf culture. What are your thoughts on the feature film?
Yeah, I think that I think there's definitely a place for it. You know, there's a lot of people that still, like, they can't afford, like, cable TV. They're just in their house. You know, imagine there's four guys that live in this house, and they have one DVD player, and they get the DVD, you know, that I made for them, and that thing's in their DVD player for like 3 months straight, you know, and it's almost like encapsulates a little time of their lives, you know, that little time when they hear that, you hear the soundtrack, or you think back, like, whoa, I remember that time. So yeah, I think it's super relevant still, because when I do, I make my film with a DVD kind of in as like the final product. When I first started, you know, 2009, 2010, there was still kind of, that was what you made a movie for, like, oh, I'm making it for this final output. But now you bring in the, well, I'm making it for iTunes, or, so I'm still making it for like the DVD format for those poor people that are home, that all they have is a DVD player. They don't have Netflix. They can't afford $7.99, or they don't even care about that.
Sure.
They're kind of living in that other world, you know, the other side of the tracks. But that's the side of the tracks that I kind of was on growing up and stuff as well. So but yeah, I mean, that's a pretty valid question if it's relevant. But yeah, I feel like and it's nice too, you know, like if you create like a nice film, it's something that could bring like a family together, or, you know, for a little bit of time, or friends, and, you know, get them together and just be kind of like, let's put this on right now, mm-hmm, and let's enjoy it. You know, we've seen Batman 46, you know, Dumb and Dumber. So yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I'm hoping with still making them. And if they don't, you know, if they're not relevant in a few years, then I won't do them.
But, well, you know, I say that as a fan. Like, I say that because I was raised on it. And, like, I could, like you said, you remember the exact room that you were sitting in and who was in the room. Like, I could take you in the garage and show you my containers full of DVDs, surf DVDs and VHSs.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, I still have those, them all, you know? Like, I was such a huge fan. And so I ask that because I struggle with it. It's like, no, I am a fan of this platform. And then I actually, as I've analyzed it, I think that I'm still a fan of the platform. I think I've been let down by our modern filmmakers. Mm. Like, I think that they've lost the plot a little bit, and maybe their interest is deferred towards commercial work or towards making short edits, and they kind of forgot how important story is.
Yep. What I try to do, or the one of the main things that I really love about, like, filmmaking and making shorts to surfing is you know, I love particular type of music to go with surfing, because a lot of the edits I see, I get lost because they're using just songs that are kind of like, I don't know, you know, like, to me it's just like, man, why did you use that song? And especially now in this kind of commercial age that we've been in the last, you know, 5 to 7 years, they use those very like dramatic songs with the, like, and it's just, you know, it's like, man, let's just keep it. I just keep it like about surfing. Yeah. I want some fun music to go along with it. Something that goes along with either the rider or the boards or the location. And just don't overthink it and don't over edit it. And like, I don't, you know, there's not too many after effects. It's just like, the effect is the surfing, and I mean, yeah, I haven't, my films aren't very story based at all. You know, they're pretty much just music and surfing, and there's a little bit of little things that go here and there, I guess. But
I'll actually argue with you about your own films. Oh. Like, even the 3-minute edits tell a story. Like, it shows your 3-minute edits, by the way. Like, it'll show hiking into the spot. And so there's an element of like, or driving down to the spot together and everybody laughing together. It's like, oh, okay, these are the guys, they're on a road trip. They had to hike into the spot. Then there's a cutaway of the conditions of the day. Like, oh, it's rainy, or oh, it's foggy. And then there's a couple of waves of the guy falling. And then him making the turn, or making, not spinning out on the finless board that he's riding.
Yeah.
And so that now actually makes me feel like I was at the beach that day, and I watched that guy paddle out on the finless board, and I questioned whether or not he could ride it, and I watched him spin out 3 times, and I watched him make one. Like, that is the story, you know? And your music selection fits with it, because it's fun and irreverent, like his session is, you know? So I think that you are actually telling that story of
the day. Yeah, I try to, without the, you know, the narrative aspect of it. Yeah. That's kind of what I've always wanted to do, just like have it naturally kind of narrate itself and just play out, just like Greeno's films or Falzon's films. It's just like, boom, they have the music, you see him like, whoa, these people are on a farm right now, they're shaping their own boards, you know, he's cutting its film, and it's like, they're going down to they're camping out in bushes, like hiding from the Navy, you know, and like that stuff. It tells its own story. But yeah, I try to definitely, my formula is pretty simple. It's just like, I want to like part, you know, nature, waves, and the subject, the surfers, you know, mostly I just want my surfer smiling. I want, like, you know, if there's like animals that are around when you get on the beach, I love shooting the animals. I love, you know, the light, obviously, and then the waves, and yeah, just surfing. The fun part for me is too, like, knowing a song that I have for a particular film project, and that I'm actually filming at the time. It's just like, whoa, you know, I'm like so excited.
You start shooting for the song.
It's almost kind of, sometimes it works that way. Yeah, it's like, whoa, you know, it's almost. Maybe that takes me back to my music video kind of beginning, you know, before I got into surf, I was doing music videos. So yeah, almost making, when I first started doing the surf edits, it was like making like surf music video kind of things, using the same formula. But yeah, like putting in certain shots to kind of put it all together to the music, which I think is the most kind of important part of the.
Are you listening to music while you're filming?
No, I actually, like, I love to hear the ambience of the, I'm not one of those, like, most filmers, like, have a radio with them and stuff, but I love the, I love the kind of alone time. I love the charge. You know, that's for me. It's like it's charging. I'm charging myself. You know, getting that vitamin D in, getting my feet in the sand. And then when I'm looking through the lens, and you know, if I'm shooting my friends surfing, it's like I feel like I'm catching the wave with them. You know, because it's the you know how long it took to us to get to this location, and then we got this board and we got, you know, this surfer right now. It's like so exciting for me. I'm just like, oh my gosh, you know, like, oh, I'm like shaking sometimes when I have like, you know, really someone that I really admire now that I'm starting to shoot with, like, you know, top guys that I'm just like, you know, living out my dream, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So it's really exciting, you know?
Well, I guess to sum it up, like that is, what your, even your shorts, convey is the story, but it's a recreation of the day itself that you were there, you know, and it makes you feel as the viewer like you're there watching that session.
That's so epic.
And I actually had it in my notes to ask you about music. You brought it up, but it factors so prominently into surf film, you know, and I agree with you. Like, I'm constantly disappointed with people's song selection. I think what it is some people just don't care about music as much as other people do. But again, talking about Taylor Steele, like, I can remember if I hear a song today that was in a Taylor Steele film and there's a certain cymbal crash, I can tell you Chris Malloy's turn that he did to that cymbal crash, you know?
I remember. Me as well.
That's how important it is.
Yeah.
And it's a shame that people overlook that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that at this point, like, I think that there's not very many current bands that are actually pumping out like good, so that has a lot to do with it, you know, like all the songs have been sung and now it's just like these pop songs or these like weird like rare things. It's like, man, I just want some like traditional, like, I love non-lyrical. A lot of the stuff I use is instrumental, so because then that brings surfing to the front, and then I use that sound to just kind of layer the surfing. But yeah, it's just a lot of modern surf movies will be like, there you go, you'll see like, you know, Mitch Colburn or, you know, whatever, he's gonna about to hit the lip, and it's just like, and then you hear someone just going like, yeah, I wanna love you. It's like, ah, oh, I don't want to hear this guy, you know, like, ah, you know, but yeah, no, music choices, it's tough because in the movie making world or in that world, a lot of people are they're paranoid that if they use this song, like, they're like, police are going to come, there's going to be helicopters, and it's not like that, you know, at all. It's very, depending on what you're using it for. I mean, obviously, if you're working for like a big, huge company, you know, and you're not going to be using like Grateful Dead songs or, right. But like some of Volcom's early movies, which was another one that I forgot to touch upon, those Troy Eckert's stuff that he did were a huge influence on me. Yeah. You know, after the Taylor Steele thing, I kind of got away from surf films and I was actually like surfing and not really like, I remember, you know, it was just kind of a point in time. I was kind of like more interested in girls. And then the Volcom movies came and I was just like, oh wow, it pulled me right back into surfing, you know? Wow, it's kind of like, whoa. And, but yeah, some of the old Volcom movies, they use like Pink Floyd stuff and they used music that they really liked and it showed in the product and the after product. Right. Some of those movies are iconic, but the thing about those is, yeah, you can't go to Netflix and go and watch it because they didn't get license the rights it. To the, yeah. So that's what I do with my films. If I'm going to sell it to, you know, in Japan and they want to make sure all the songs are cleared, I'll just switch out the soundtrack to the soundtrack that would work for that. Yeah. And boom, that's how I do it. But that's my favorite part, is picking out the music for the films, because I'm like so excited that like, wow, like there's going to be a film with like not annoying music in it. That, I'm so excited.
Totally. Another thought on the relevance of feature film. I went to that Costa Mesa premiere of Free Jazz Vein, whenever that was, on Friday. And that kind of affirmed the value of watching surf films in a group environment on the big screen.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that film in particular shows best on the big screen.
Yeah.
In this case, it was a big wall.
Yeah.
But the energy of the room, you know, and like communally going out and imbibing in this thing and consuming it together, it was infinitely more enjoyable than watching it by myself at home.
Yep.
God forbid, on my phone.
Yep.
You know?
For sure.
So I was kind of like, oh, yeah, I get it. Oh, like, this is what it was meant to be, you know?
Yep.
With the music pumped up super loud and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So that definitely has relevance still.
Yeah. No, that's one of the funnest parts about making the film at the end, when you just kind of all come together. And then, my last film, The Zone, I've been so burned out on doing all the premieres and stuff, but I used to be so excited for my premieres. I only did like two premieres. I did one in Australia and then I did one in Costa Mesa. And I was like, I don't want to go on tour. I don't care. The movies speak for itself, blah, blah, blah. I'm not worried about that. But yeah, that one event that you went to last weekend, for instance, like Jared and Alex and Justin and everyone was there. And when that energy, everyone comes together and there's like your favorite surfers are there, you know, and it's like it brings like the tribe together, you mm-hmm. know, like these are the guys that are doing it. And yeah, definitely is a lot better on the big screen with the hoots and stuff. I mean, that's what it's all about. Yeah.
It's an experience that the 3-minute edit or the internet can't really replace, you know?
And yeah.
I feel like so much of the surf media that I absorb is through Instagram nowadays, and it's probably the worst platform for it, you know, especially surf imagery.
Mm.
But again, I don't really subscribe to magazines anymore, so I'm only fooling myself. You know, it's like I'm replacing, I want the convenience, so I use Instagram, but really I know I enjoy it more when I pull out the magazine and spend some time actually thumbing through it, you know? So, I don't know. Maybe we, the consumers, are just eating our own tails, you know?
We are, yeah. I'd say that's right, yeah. Because, I don't subscribe to any magazines in a couple years. And, I mean, every time that I just run to the Frog House and get the shop copy, you know, when the new Surfer Journal comes out or the new Surfer or something.
Where do you get most of your, what media do you follow? Obviously you don't subscribe to magazines. Are you on Instagram all day, every day, like everybody else or?
I live next door to surf shop, so I'm able to kind of check the mags, you know, even as disappointing as it is. But I mean, Surfers Journal, you know, I really like, respect and like, and Surfer Mag, I've always, you know, had a good relationship with and stuff. But yeah, you can see over the years, it's kind of like thinning out and that there's kind of some weird ads in there. And it's kind of like, whoa, you know, like this is, why did they run this shot? And what's this? So yeah, I mean, I get just like the rest of everyone, you know, a lot of Instagram stuff. And then, occasional print here and there. And I'm not really like big, like stab, you know, online guy. I'll go check Stab, you know, once every couple weeks or something. Or if I know if there's a cool edit, I'd be like, oh, Stab, and I'll be like, cool, I'll go check Stab. Or I'll check what Youth, if it's like when they did the thing on Gavin Beshin, I was like, whoa, that's awesome. And then if it's someone I like, I'll go, you know. What are the outlets? Yeah, there's like Inertia, Corduroy.
Beach Grit.
Yeah, Beach Grit.
What about, you said if there's an edit that you want to see, who do you like? Who do you look forward to nowadays in terms of surfers that you want to watch and in terms of filmmakers that you're interested in?
Mm-hmm. Obviously, like when a Mason Ho edit comes out, it's like, yeah, Mason!
That's sick. Who doesn't love Mason?
Yeah, not anybody. Yeah, he's such a lord. But he kind of embodies the spirit, I think, of what surfing is. Like, he's completely in love with surfing. It shows in his surfing, and it shows... And then he just has this, like, really charismatic thing that's happening with him. And it's just... I really love Mason's edits. it's so hard to, like, because, yeah, there's really not any, like, Robin Kegel edits that ever come out. I love, you know, Machado, when Machado comes out with an edit. Like, maybe 5 years ago, you know, in the Marine Layer days, I was so excited for Dane edits. But yeah, it's tough nowadays to really find. I can't even think of, like, a filmmaker that kind of fires me up at the moment where I'm like, wow, I can't wait till they...
Yeah. I was wondering, actually, as you were saying that, Mason and Dane both are good examples of guys who just partnered up with a filmmaker, and I'm trying to tease apart how much of those things that we saw was actually Dane or Minnie Blanchard. Or Mason or... I think it's Rory
Pringle, yeah.
Right. And it's almost like you see, I don't know, Leonardo DiCaprio does a bunch of Martin Scorsese films in a row, you know? And it's like,
yeah,
they're just partners. Or Kelly rides Al Merrick's boards exclusively for a period of time. And you wonder, yeah, I don't know. I've just never really thought of that with a surfer and a filmmaker before. But those guys are definitely partnered up.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, no, that's pretty huge. I mean, I'd been known early in my, when I first started my career, was, you know, me and Alex were kind of a team. It was me and Nose, and me and him were, for the first, you know, 3-4 years that I was shooting, it was kind of like Alex was my guy, and that was it, you know?
Yeah.
It does. Like, it has a huge effect on every surfer, you know, to have someone that you're comfortable with, and then you partner up, and then
I could see the value, obviously, for Mason, just or for Rory, I guess, even just to be like, dude, I'm hitching my thing to this guy because Mason is the man.
But then it goes the other way too, because, like, he's really helped Mason out, you know. That's what I used to think too. I used to be like, oh my gosh, like, I owe everything to blah, blah, blah. And then kind of looking back now, it's like, whoa, I was helping out this person. I helped this person as well. Now that I see, like, whoa, they're, like, established in the surf world, and they need the help as well. And it's nice when you have someone that you respect for the surfers that they're comfortable with. And then most of all, like, the guy can pump out some, like, good, fun edits that kind of represent the surfer in a good way.
Well, the reality is Mason was around for quite a while before he and Rory linked up, and we didn't see a lot of Mason. So he definitely owes a tremendous amount to Rory. And the other thing is, it's hard to have a dependable filmer, dude. That's the other thing that I think a lot of people don't realize is nobody wants to go sit on the beach and film endlessly every single day when the waves are pumping.
Yeah.
So that is a rare trait for a surf filmmaker.
Yeah. I like
surfers.
It. Yeah.
Do you?
No, I usually, like, when the waves are bad, that's when I get to surf, you know? So, and the waves are bad most of the time, so I get to surf a bunch.
Yeah.
But when the waves are good, like, man, I want to shoot, like, especially if it's someone that I'm excited to shoot with, you know?
Yeah.
Like, oh, I'll shoot 10 hours straight, just sit there and be like, yeah, like, you know, and at the end of the day, you know, they'll be like, thanks for shooting. I'll just be like, yeah, thanks for surfing.
That's funny. I was going to ask you how you manage that. I would think that you'd be cringing when the waves are killer.
Yeah, no, not really. I mean, it's like, man, I've had so, you know, I mean, who cares about my surfing, you know? Like, I don't, you know, I've already done it all. I've been tubed. I've done, you know, I've done some airs. I've done a few cutbacks and nothing spectacular. And I've done a metwide trip with photographers, you know, shooting me and stuff. And it's like, at the end of the day, it's kind of like, all right, well, you know, I'm all right, you know, average surfer. Who cares about it? And now I love, like, surfing soft top boards when the waves are bad and no one's around, you know, or I'll go surf some shore pound and I don't have to worry about, like, you know, hustling with the thruster guys and stuff. And so for me, it's just like, well, when the waves aren't good, then I get to surf, you know, if it's body surf or longboard or soft top, like, and then when the waves are good, I'm focused on shooting because, like I said, it's like, I love capturing those images. And it's like, for me, like, a rush, and I feel like I'm actually surfing the wave with who I'm shooting, you know. Sometimes I'm just like, whoa, you know. It's but yeah, it's hard to find a dependable shooter as well. A lot of filmers are kind of flaky, or they're kind of like, they'll complain, or they want to surf when the waves are good, or so. Yeah, it's tough to find a good shooter for these surfers.
If you who's somebody that you want to shoot?
Somebody that I want to shoot that I don't shoot with?
Yeah, maybe like somebody that you've never shot with. Like who's on your hit list of guys?
Well, you know, kind of at the moment, who I'm trying to, I really would like to be in my next film is Mark Cunningham. So he's kind of, I've just met him a few weeks ago, and I actually have shot with him now. I have like a little bit of footage that I'm storing up, but
the body surfer.
Yeah, the body surfer. And now it's kind of the now is the time where like Thomas Campbell introduced me to Mark. So I was like introduced through a legitimate thing, and Mark's kind of feeling me out, and he's just like, who, you know, he doesn't know who I am. I could just be some. So I have to kind of like prove myself to him that I really want him in my next film. And that's kind of the same process that I went through with like Derek Hine. You know, Derek Hine was like a, you know, a four-year kind of like game of cat and mouse, you know, like where he was just like, he met me, I came right up hot, like boom, how's it going, you know, da da da. And then eventually like I was still around, you know, and he's like, well, who is this guy, like what's going on here? And I mean, there would be months at a time where I'd see Derek on a daily basis, and I never took a picture of him, never, you know. I wanted to just be like, I want him to respect me, like what I'm doing and everything. So that's hard, you know, because I'd just be like, oh my God, I'm sitting like with one of my favorite surfers of all time right now. And like, I want to take a picture, you know, but.
Was that in Australia?
Yeah, that was in Australia. I met D. Hind in 2013. And then eventually I met Dave Rostovich. And then it's like, these guys are all like kind of, you know, my favorite surfers, and I'm able to meet them and then kind of work into where we're able to shoot and stuff like that. But those are the ones I would say, that the people that I'd love to shoot with Raf some more, you know, of course. And, I'd love to shoot George Greeno, like just at Watagos on his air mat. And then, yeah, Mark Cunningham is like, for me, like, that's as good as it gets.
What do you want to get with Mark Cunningham? What's your ambition there?
I just, for my next film, I just wanted to have he just, that little away from surfing and hardboarding, where you get to the core of like what surfing is, and just body surfing with your body. I think it's the most, obviously it's the most pure form of surfing. So I've always kind of, I haven't had any of that in any of my films, so I think it's like a natural progression. And now I was like, man, you know, well, if I'm gonna have body surfing, I'd love to have a body surfing section. Who would I want to have in it? And it's kind of like, you know, David Rostovich, Mark Cunningham, or you know, Cunningham is like the man. And then I started thinking like, whoa, you know, Rasta is like really good at body surfing too. Maybe we'll have them, you know, or something. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I just. You know, the next film's going to be pretty similar to The Zone, and it's going to be a little bit more. I'm going to touch on a few more things, like, you know, we're going to have like maybe some body surfing in it. Maybe I'm going to touch on like the surfers, like the families, and they're like part of their units in the pieces as well. So there's going to be like some kind of more of like a family kind of connection, and your loved ones, and you know, I'm going to make it a little bit more. It's going to be sweet, you know, with a bit of like humor, and then, you know, just like surfing and smiling and sun. I mean, that's kind of like the plan for the next one.
Do you have a title in mind?
I do have a title in mind, but it's not 100% yet. So I don't want to like, I don't want to say it because it might change, because things change. But at the moment, it's pretty. It seems like I feel like 96%. Like I got the title in the bag, but But that 4%,
I mean, as the film takes shape, it might dictate the title.
I'll just give. I mean, it'd be very similar to the last title. Okay. So.
That Derek Hine footage that was in the zone, right? He's riding like an 11-foot something. Is it 11 feet?
Yeah, like it's 11.6. Yeah, 11 the the elephant gun. Yeah, that was the one he took out after the Fanning shark attack, right?
That footage is so sick, dude.
Yeah,
it's so sick. That exactly how I opened the show with saying, like, it's mind altering. It's like, oh my gosh, I can surf entirely different than I'm currently surfing with my current ability level. Yep. I can go out there, do something brand new, in places of the wave I never thought about before, on boards that I never thought about before. Board I have in my garage, I'll just take the fins out, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's so radical.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Well, yeah, it's, I was lucky to, you know, be able to shoot with Derek and get him kind of on all of his favorite boards. You know, that movie's the quintessential D. Hine movie in the, be able to look back, he has all of his favorite boards, you know, his like 7.0s, his 5.3, has his catfishes, and then yeah, that one, the yellow board is an iconic board. I was thinking of the 11.6, the white one, but the yellow one, it's a was in Glass Love in the 70s, I think it was a single fin in that film, and then he's altered that one down, so it was I was pretty lucky to get that board in the movie. But yeah, that board is in half at the moment, and there was like Chinese tourist at Watergoods in the little paddle boats, and he snapped that board in half. So I was stoked to get that board in, and all the other boards that he really like loves to ride. And
what was the last board that you rode? I guess it was today.
Yep.
But that's always a question for everybody interviewed, is just what was the last surfboard that you rode?
I rode a Tanner Prairie 9.3. It's just kind of standard log at San Onofre.
Nice. And his boards are looking really, really killer.
Yeah. He's just a really nice traditional shaper. He's actually just come out with a new, he's doing a little side thing. So it's not just like Tanner Prairie, but it's called Dash Surfboards. So he's doing that. Yeah. It's brand new, probably in the last month. And he's just like a really solid guy, you know, like he's a family man. He's got two kids. He's always been responsible. You know, he's not like party guy.
Right.
And, you can always rely on like a good board on time, and he's not like flaky, and he's really, really good surfer. I'm kind of like, I've been shooting with him over the last couple weeks, and I'm just realizing like, wow, you know, like he's really beautiful approach to the wave, and I'm just kind of like, is he gonna be in my next movie, or, you know, I don't know, you know, it's like, so.
Well, he's underexposed.
Yeah, no, 100%. Well, the thing is his younger brother, his name's Levi, and he is like completely underexposed. Like he's not even in the surf world, but he's the one that I'm kind of thinking he's going to be in my next movie. Cause he is just like out of this world. Like the stuff that he's doing is like, no one's doing it. And that excites me, you know, and his youthful energy and stuff. And then, you know, Tanner's like the smooth one, calculated one. And then Levi's younger brother's kind of like the wild one. And it shows in their surfing, like, together.
That's a story right there.
I know
that juxtaposition.
That's a short that I'm working on right now. I'm so excited. I just over the last week realized that's a one project that I'm getting into.
Where do people find your work? Where can we direct listeners to buy The Zone and to watch all these shorts you're talking about?
I'd say you can Vimeo on demand. iTunes has got a lot of like the feature films. I would say like The Zone and The Groove Move was the last movie I made before The Zone. It's pretty good. The Groove Move is all 100% Super 8, and a lot of my old work is like 100% Super 8, and I kind of look back at it now, I'm like, what was I thinking, man? Just shit. But yeah, I would definitely say, you know, if you haven't seen any of my work, The Zone is the one I'm most proud of. It's my latest one, and it's kind of the direction that I'm going, you know, making it more, you know, my old stuff is like getting like, oh, this is artsy, and you know, now it's just like I just want my surfers smiling, beautiful waves to nice music. that's my formula. And I would say Mollusk Surf Shop on Vimeo, they give me free reign, and I've been working with them for, you know, over 3 years. Now it's like I get to do whatever projects come into my mind, and then I give it to them. So I love all of, you know, I've done some shape or profile pieces on there and stuff, and that's a good place to check out. Like, I don't know, like my own Vimeo page, I haven't uploaded a video in, you know, 3 years or something. So
I was going to ask you about Mollusk. Like, I don't know those guys, but I love everything that they've done, and like the shapers that they support, the brands they carry.
Yeah.
I feel like your work dovetails perfectly with their aesthetic. What's their story?
They're just...
Who are they? Where'd they come from?
Like San Francisco, yeah. Okay. I think there's one... kind of John McCambridge is the main guy that started the company, and it was just a surf shop. And then now they branch out into like clothing and stuff, but I just kind of more am into the surfboards and the shapers that they support, that they sell. And so it's kind of like, for me, it's like, it's about surfing with them. But yeah, they've branched out to, I guess, like some of the Marshall brothers. They do the Venice store. They helped run the Venice store when it started. And I don't know, I think it's just, guys that kind of saw the other side of surfing, you know, the non-thruster side, and they saw and they filled that void. And then yeah, I was just kind of like lucky enough at that time when, you know, the early 2010, 2011 ish, when they approached me, and I was doing stuff for Corduroy TV as well for Cyrus, and they're like, I was like, oh, here's a short, and they were like, okay, here's money, you know. I was like, whoa, you're gonna give me that much money for this? And that was how it started, you know. Like, they were awesome. And then now to this day, they just let me do free reign. So okay. The stuff that you see over the last, you know, 2 years is all me. It's just, yeah, it's epic. So it's like a perfect scenario. And
I'm always psyched on it.
Yeah.
Like you said, you look forward to Mason Ho's edits. I look forward to those edits.
Yeah. I mean, I'd be psyched if there was another kind of surf shop or something that did that, you know, like, yeah, Pilgrim Surf Shop in New York. Like, man, come out with some videos, you know, like, I'd be so excited to, I get excited to see like a longboard edit or like anything other than thruster surfing. And it's so hard to get that on the internet nowadays. So yeah, I would, if there's someone out there, just please start making some shorts I get excited about.
Well, I criticize surf film a lot on this podcast, but again, like I said, it's just because I'm a huge fan, you know, and yeah, I want to hold, I don't mean to throw Taylor or anybody under the bus. It's like, I want to hold them to the highest standard that, you know, I think that they can achieve and that he can achieve. But I think that the most successful surf films or even 3-minute edits that I've ever seen do two things really well. Number one, I think there's always story is involved. But number two is actually more important, and that is it should make you psyched to go surf. And I think your films have always executed that second goal in spades. Like, everything I've watched from you, I'm like, psyched.
Epic. So, well, yeah, that's the ultimate goal. I mean, really, that sums it up. Like, at the end, do you want to go surfing, or do you want to just shut it off and like, all right, let's go eat some food, or, you know, like.
Yeah, and everybody's got an opinion on whatever, digital versus film, or like whatever in the film itself. But if you finish it and at the end you're psyched to go shred.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a success.
Yeah.
So, bravo.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks for coming, dude.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
Jack, we're We're super psyched to have you around and doing the work that you do. I know I am. Look forward to every single thing that you put out and hope that you continue on your path for a long time to come. Keep introducing us to new surfers, new equipment, new ways of riding waves. Super, super grateful for that. And it's really kind of informed my surf experience. And thank you to listeners for always tuning in, for sharing the show, and for contributing to the show. We have a donation platform set up through PayPal. You can access it on surfsplendorpodcast.com. You can make a one-time donation, or you're more than welcome as well to set up a subscription for, we have different options, $5, $10, $20 a month, and just keep the show afloat. It really, every single dollar goes a really long way. I'm going to be introducing merchandise as well in the very near future. So lots of things to come that are really just made possible by the donations. So thanks for that. And then, of course, if you want to see anything that we discussed in the show, if you would like to leave a comment and chime in on the conversation, you could do it on surfsplendorpodcast.com and, of course, on Instagram at surfsplendor. All right, that is all that I have for you this week for Surf Splendor, for Wax On. If you want to check out the wine show, make sure you go ahead and you can download and subscribe to that. Just search the Double D Wine Show. And on Instagram, it's Double D Wine. So follow along there. Super irreverent, fun take on a very stodgy kind of elitist world of wine. We're just breaking it down and having fun with it. So check that out if you care at all about wine or if you want to just learn something about wine. All right. Thanks as always for tuning in. This is David Scales for the Surf Splendor Network saying get back in the ocean, get a couple of waves, and shred on.